I was really excited, but also very nervous. The first things I googled sort of how do you breastfeed two babies, how big you get during your pregnancies, all those sort of, I think, worries that most twin mums probably have at that sort of initial stage, how you're going to cope with feeding two, how the sleeping is going to be. So yeah, there was a lot of sort of excitement, but also, I guess a bit scared about it and how we were going to cope with two babies. So pregnancy all went fine. I had non-identical twins, so they had their own sacs and placenta, so we were quite lucky that everything was straightforward for us. We were in hospital for about 4 days before we came home with them, and then we really struggled with the sleep. So they, I was initially breastfeeding them, but that was really hard. You know, some nights we were getting 20, 30 minutes sleep a night.
Welcome to the Sleep Nanny podcast. We're here to serve as your parenting partner, your sanity saver, and bring you a healthy dose of wholesome conversation with guests and experts to make the minefield of parenting more joyful and less overwhelming. Welcome to this episode where I am joined by Emily Simpson. Now, Emily is a mum of three. She had twins, and then when they just turned three, she had another one. So almost three under three. She certainly knows what it's like to have her hands full. And Emily is also one of our certified partners at the Sleep Nanny. So Emily, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi. Tell us a little bit more just about you and what brought you to this stage in the journey as a mum and an expert in sleep.
Yeah, so we initially found out we were having twins when I was around 7 weeks pregnant, and my husband was actually abroad at a wedding in Italy at this time, so I found out on my own. My dad was with me, but sort of not in the scan room, so I had to phone him and FaceTime him to tell him that we were having twins, which obviously came as a bit of a shock to him. So yeah, I was really excited, but also very nervous. The first things I googled was sort of how do you breastfeed two babies, how big you get during your pregnancies, all those sort of, I think, worries that most twin mums probably have at that sort of initial stage, how you're going to cope with feeding two, how the sleeping is going to be. So yeah, there was a lot of sort of excitement, but also, I guess a bit scared about it and how we were going to cope with two babies. So pregnancy all went fine. I had non-identical twins, so they had their own sacs and placenta, so we were quite lucky that everything was straightforward for us. We were in hospital for about 4 days before we came home with them, and then we really struggled with the sleep. So they I was initially breastfeeding them, but that was really hard. You know, some nights we were getting 20, 30 minutes sleep a night, and that was it.
Wow. Because
they were continually breastfeed. You'd breastfeed one, it could take, 4 to 5 minutes an hour to breastfeed them, put them down, and the other one's awake. Mm-hmm. So that was really challenging on both of us, really, because my husband would also be up and dealing with the other one or burping one. So after 2 weeks of that, with my husband going back to work, we decided that we couldn't continue like that. So we then went into formula feeding at night time. So we would each take a baby, feed the baby, burp them and put them back down. So if one baby woke, we'd wake the other one, and that completely changed everything for us. So made things a lot easier. And I would also pump at those times of bottle feeding them. So then in the day, it just made it easier. I would breastfeed one and bottle feed the other one with express breast milk. Then the next feed, I'd swap them round. So trying to, sort of combi feed a bit, really, because I find it quite difficult, the sort of feeding them both at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was all, I think those first 6 weeks for us, we found, really hard. We were exhausted. We couldn't find time to cook ourselves dinner or anything. So we were very lucky. We had family bringing food round. If friends came to visit, we would give them a baby each, and we're just going to go and get 20 minutes sleep.
Good plan.
Doing anything we could to get a bit of sleep in. And then we started a routine around 6 weeks. And this is what initially stemmed my interest in becoming a sleep consultant. So I did loads of research. And we started being sort of quite strict with that they were going to sleep at the same time, waking up at the same time, being fed at the same time. And that for me was just such a game changer. Up to that point, I had really struggled. Mm. And then I knew at what times I could go out, go to baby classes and things like that, because I knew that I wouldn't be stuck in a situation where one of them was going to need to get to sleep or to be fed or anything like that. So that structure for me worked really well.
Mm. Mm.
And since then, we've always kept to it. So even now, at 4 years old, they're sort of in the bath, 6 o'clock. You know, we're very regimented. They're down asleep by 7 o'clock every single night.
Yeah.
I think some people thought we were completely crazy because we were so strict with this routine. But for my mental health and for the boys as well, they were so happy and content.
Yeah,
that was the best thing that we ever chose to do, really.
I was going to ask, about them, and how it affected them. Because actually, like you say, you needed that structure. That structure was a sanity saver for you and for your sleep. But actually, they thrive too, and it really helps them as well, right?
Yeah, really. And they were so happy and content. And people always come to say, oh, they're so content. And I genuinely believe it's because they were getting the sleep that they needed. And yes, they still woke up at night. You know, it's not that, they were sleeping through. It was just that they had those structured sleeps. They had nap times. And for me as well, it meant that during the day, I knew what time the naps were. So in the morning, I would, once they'd gone down for the nap, I would whiz around the house, sort out their bottles, clean everything from the night before, sort of get on top of things. I'd get all the stuff in the car ready because we'd be going out to meet friends or some play date or whatever we were doing. And then I'd get back for their lunchtime nap as well. So then I knew that I'd have good sort of 2 hours really over lunch to get dinner prepared. And so for me, it just made a huge difference. And they've always been great with sort of going down at nap time and everything because we did it from an early age.
Yeah.
They knew those cues. We did bedtime routine from 6 weeks. For us, that worked really, really well.
And it sounds like you said, when you found out you were having twins, you Googled everything, you tried to get in the know as much as you could, but it sounds like almost nothing could prepare you for the reality of actual juggle of, like you said, well, how do I feed two? And you can read things, but till you're doing it, it's probably quite different. And so, I mean, how do people prepare for that? If, if it's almost until you're in that situation,
Yeah, I think, like you said, just sort of reading up and understanding a bit about how to keep them on the same routine. So sort of understanding a bit about their weightiness, because in a way, it's almost an advantage having twins to having them at different sort of stages, because they've got the same sort of sleep needs at the same times. So, if you can be regimented and be feeding them at the same time, getting sleep at the same time, naturally, they're at the same age. So that's, age related is right for them. So I think sort of getting that basis and the understanding of sleep, and that's what I think we did. But 6 weeks in, before that, when we'd always said, our one thing that we want to get right is sleep, because both my husband and I love our sleep. We both really struggle without it. And I think that when having that support as well, my husband was really on board with it. He actually took a day off the first day we started the routine. He was like, I'm going to take a day off work. We're going to do this. We're going to, get them down, settle them to sleep at the same time, wake them up at the same time. And that for me was I think I would really struggle to do it on my own, because you're exhausted. They wake up at different times in the night. It's hard.
Yeah.
I think even with one baby, but with two, it can be really tough. So I think for us as well, getting prepared, making sure you've got a changing station downstairs. So you've got the vest, the baby grows, everything downstairs as well. So we actually bought a changing table just to put in our living room for those first 6 months, so you're not constantly running up and down. Sort of being prepared with things like that. Having bouncers, so we'd have a bouncer upstairs, a bouncer downstairs. So if I'm dealing with one, you can put the other one in the bouncer. You can bounce with your foot whilst you're changing nappies, you know what I mean? Just so that you've got those aids there for you. Or if you're doing bath time on your own, especially when they're really small, I'd have one in a bouncer next to me in the bathroom and one in the bath, and then sort of change and swap over. So thinking about those, anything that can be helpful for you at those beginning couple of months, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
I was going to say, sort of preparing food-wise. I mean, that sounds like it's not really something you'd probably think about, but we really struggled with cooking our dinners because we had a baby each constantly. You know, when they're newborns, they want to be held. Mm. So sort of getting a freezer stash, cooking loads of stuff in the freezer so you can just get it out, or asking people when they come around, can you bring us a meal? You know, that people won't mind, and you think people like to help, just almost sort of accepting that help and relying on other people a bit to help out in those times.
I think it's one of the best gifts, isn't it, that you can take for a new family, a new mum, a new, you know, new parents, is here's a cottage pie to last for a week.
Healthy snack bars my mum used to bring. I used to when I was breastfeeding them both through the night, I'd be starving, so I'd have some sort of snack bars with loads of nuts and things like that in to snack on in the night.
That's so helpful, definitely. So when you now, so this whole experience led you to that fascination with sleep and what works and how that works. And then you did it all again when they were just over three with third baby. What do you feel you see, you know, obviously you have lots of parents come to you for help specifically with twins because they know you're the person that not just has the expertise like I do, but you've got the experience as well firsthand. Mm-hmm. And you know, they know you understand, and you know you understand them. What do you feel that they most commonly ask, or you know, the sticking points that they're like, that they struggle with most?
The concern of one baby waking the other one. So that's a big thing, and how to get them onto the same routine. So I think with twins, what happens quite a lot is you rush to them because you hear a slight noise at night and you think, I'm going to get on. We used to do this. Get to them as quickly as you can because you don't want to risk waking the other baby. And then you've got two babies awake that are then going to be sort of needed to resettle. So I'd say that's probably the main one, is that sort of how to deal with that, with them waking each other. And that is something, it's part of the learning process. A lot of twins share sort of even cots at the beginning stages, but share rooms. So it is sort of a part of a learning process, and they do learn to just sleep through each other. And there will be sort of phases where you'll find they're waking each other up. But sort of when they've moved into their own bedroom, the ideal setup is to try and have the cots, you know, on opposite sides of the wall, so that they're not right next to each other, and a white noise machine in between. So that can really help sort of drowning that noise out a little bit and reduce the risk of them waking each other. And it will, they get used to it. You know, my boys now, they, you know, most of the time they're great sleepers. On the other night, if one of them does wake, the other one's flat out. They don't even sort of move an inch in their sleep. So yeah, it's a sort of learning process of getting used to each other's noises.
Yeah.
And the other one is getting them onto that same routine. So that can be tough, especially, you know, if they're older and they haven't been on that same routine, sort of trying to develop that. So sort of making sure they're waking at similar times, that they're feeding at the same time, going down to bed at the same time. And that's such a huge thing with twins, because otherwise you've got them waking, especially when they're sort of tiny, waking at separate times at the night, you know, and sometimes when they're newborn, it can take an hour-ish to feed them, can't it? To feed, burp, and then resettle them. Yeah. By the time you've done that, you could have, you know, 40 minutes until the next one's due to be awake.
If you're lucky.
Exactly. So it's getting them, getting into that routine of, especially when they're tiny, waking the other one to feed them. And there will be some cases where there's one twin that's a much lower birth weight, so in that case they might need more feeds. So there are sort of some exceptions to that, but on the whole, if they're on the same sort of point of feeding and how much they're taking and everything, waking one when the other one's woken, and I'd keep that going until you've weaned off night feeding.
So that's definitely one of those things that seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? Like, that one's sleeping, let them sleep. But actually, waking and sinking them up is it going to have the longer term benefit.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Do you find, I have found over the years, whenever I've worked with families with twins, they're, in my experience, they've always come to me with one twin that is particularly challenging with sleep and the other that's actually quite a good sleeper. I think I've only maybe once or twice had situations where both twins are a challenge, but usually, especially if they're baby twins rather than toddler twins, it's a case that, you know, there's the good sleeper and the not so good sleeper. Do you find that quite common?
Yeah, with every family I've worked with, that's the case. There's usually one that finds sleep a lot easier, they can settle themselves easier. And I also find quite often they almost will sort of look over to the other one who's kicking up a fuss, doesn't want to go to sleep, and almost just sort of roll over and think, oh, and just go to sleep. And I've got quite a lot of twin mum friends, and my twins were certainly the same. There's always been one that's... even from newborn, he was a lot more relaxed. You'd lay him down and he'd just go to sleep. And the other one, my other little one, found it a lot harder. Yeah, so that's really common. And I think that's also sort of linked into personality quite a bit. You quite often have a more laid-back twin and a more sort of alert twin. Usually the alert twin that finds it a bit harder sort of to settle themselves asleep and sort of switch off, I guess, at nap times and things.
The laid-back twin's probably the one that's, you know, it's like, I've got your back, it's fine. I'm going to just relax over here because I know that you need this extra help. I remember working with a family that there were two sets of twins and a single child. I think they were all under 10. This is going back a long time now. But the juggle is real. And even in that situation, it was a case of identifying, okay, who is actually okay here? And who do we really need to support with their sleep? They weren't babies, so it was, you know, a little easier to you know, make those identifications and then work to their personality needs. But I imagine that if we're talking about, you know, baby twins, even from newborn or sort of 6 months or that sort of age in that first year, and you're still learning their personalities, you know, you're still trying to get to grips with their different cries and what their needs are. How do you know which twin to kind of get onto their routine or rhythm, or, you know, when you said about wake one to fit with the other, would you wake a good sleeper to fit a bad sleeper's frequent wakings every time they woke, or would you be like, this one's good right now, we want this one to fit with this one? Like, how do you figure that out?
I'd say certainly with my twins, it was quite clear from the offset with that. We had one that was, even his sort of how his body was, he was very floppy and relaxed, and the other one was almost quite uptight and straight, like you told him, and he'd be really rigid and straight. So it was quite clear from the offset with them. And so the one that found sleep a bit harder, he would take longer to settle, and actually my husband could settle him easier than what I could. It was a lot quicker for my husband to settle him. Whereas the other one, from a really young age, you could just pop him in the cot and he'd just go to sleep.
Lovely.
So that was very obvious from the beginning. And we did get to the point where it was maybe 3 months, 4 months in, when we actually stopped waking the one that was a better sleeper, because we thought, actually, I think he can go much longer. So we did get to that point where we were then feeding one in the night and the other one would go for longer stretches. So I think... As a mum, you sort of get to know that, and you think, actually, I'm waking him, he's not really hungry. So, you know, you don't want to be waking and feeding them if they're not at that point and they're not hungry.
Yeah.
And I think also you sort of judging by their daytime feeds, you know, how long they can go in between feeds during the day. So if one of them's waking up, you know, if they go 3 to 4 hours throughout the day between feeds, and then one's waking up 2 hours of going down, then I'd be looking to, sort of resettle rather than waking the other one and trying to resettle that one without a feed, because you think that, you know, the chances are it isn't actually because he's hungry, he's just waking, he needs help to resettle.
So it's a bit like then holding one to the other one's standards, isn't it? Like, okay,
yeah,
we know that they, you know, particularly if you know that they are similar in terms of developmental stage and capacity, size, and so on.
Yeah.
So if one can do it, you're like, okay, I know that the other one can. It's just about helping them along and showing them the way. So it's like, yeah, that makes sense. It makes a lot of sense.
And I found as well, when they were, when we moved them from cots and into beds, which I hadn't done my sort of my sleep consulting training at that point, so I wish I had, because it would have gone a bit smoother. And we had one that would just repeatedly get out of his bed, sort of, it could be 40 50 60 times at bedtime. So nighttime he was fine, he'd sleep in through the night, but it was like that initial bedtime.
Yeah.
And the other twin would lay on his front like this, watching, kicking his legs as if he was watching a TV show, and he'd be like saying, "Mummy, he's out of bed again." So it was that sort of, yeah, you've quite often got the one that's mine especially, I've got one that always tells on the other one, and the other one that is just doing whatever he likes to do, really.
So talk to us a bit, Emily, about whether or not you would, and when you would, keep your twins together or separate in terms of their sleeping arrangements. That could be the same sleep space, the same room. What are the kind of fors and against with separating them for sleeps?
Yeah, so a lot of that, I think, is personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning, I know a lot of people, you will keep them together at the beginning. So there's a really good fact sheet on the Lullaby Trust website specifically for twin sleep. So they advise never to let twins share a Moses basket. So because they're quite small, even if they're, you know, even if your twin's very small, the Moses baskets, I think it's due to risk of overheating. So with Moses baskets, always separate Moses baskets, but those next to me cribs, safest way is foot to foot. So you have sort of the baby's head in the middle and then their feet at the end, until they get too big to do that. And I think it's always advisable, to, especially when they start rolling, to then put them into separate cots. Just because, yeah, babies can be quite active. And when you've got two in there, if they're sort of rolling over, especially if they've got sleeping bags on and things like that, just from a safety, a sleep safety aspect, it's advisable to put them into separate cots.
I suppose much like the, like why you wouldn't put a teddy bear in or, anything else in with a baby on their own. It's like that at that point, the twin being in there with them is like exactly that thing.
And definitely check out the Lullaby Trust fact sheet, because there's loads of good information on there. The other thing with moving into their bedrooms, I guess a lot of that is personal choice and probably governed by whether you've got two spare rooms. We did have a spare room, but we chose to keep them together because we thought the likelihood we probably would have one more child, so we didn't want to separate them and then have to go through the process of sort of get them to work out to sleep back in that same room again. So they are in the same room. I touched on this slightly earlier, but sort of trying to have them, their cots on separate ends of the room with a machine in between, it just helps sort of reducing the chance of them waking each other. And also you'll find they get to that point, you know, when they can stand up in their cots, especially for nap time, then they're having the time of their life if they can be right next to each other, because it's you've got another human in there stimulating them. Where there's one baby, there's nothing going on, so you go to sleep.
Would you potentially separate them for naps but not for nights if you needed to? Like, is there ever a cause for that, like, where, okay, we're going to do this for nap time because we're trying to work on one sleep, the other one needs to just go sleep and that's fine, but then at night time we're going to bring them back together? Is there, you know, would you find
I think that's definitely beneficial, sort of when you're trying to sort of get those cot naps in and get them used to napping in their cot and extending those naps. We certainly did that. So we had one in their bedroom for nap time and one in our bedroom in the next to me cot, trying to, because I found we tried putting them together and they just disturbed each other the whole time. So we probably did that for maybe a couple of months, had them napping in separate rooms. And then once they'd really got that skill of going to sleep, sort of napping for longer periods and everything, we put them back in the room together.
Yeah.
And that worked fine. They would just, sort of go to sleep. But yeah, we separated. Nighttime never really seemed to be an issue.
Different, isn't it?
Yeah, they're very calm and
because during the day, and you know, we know that nap training and getting babies to sleep well for naps can be difficult anyway, even with just one. And it is a different criteria. You know, we don't have the same cues and signals that you know, sleep time's coming or it's nighttime, and it's harder to get the hang of. And I think if you have got one that is more inclined to settle and sleep quite well for the nap, and one that does need a bit more help and support, if we're not accommodating the one that could have that good sleep and they're then getting disturbed, it's then going to impact on their ability to sleep well at nighttime, and then you've got this vicious cycle. Whereas at least you know if you've got one well rested, it's going to aid the whole picture at nighttime, and then you'll get there quicker. So I think that's actually quite good for parents to recognise.
Yeah, and I think that's good to do early on. Sort of, I've got, worked with some families where they're sort of much older, and actually sort of when they're 18 months, 2 years old, separating them to try and work on that can actually be more disturbing for them. Sort of that can disrupt them more than keeping them together. So sort of the more aware they are, the more difficult that can be. If they're always used to being in their room together, suddenly, well, you know, why are you taking them out? And then not going to sleep because they want to know what the other one's doing. So I think, definitely early on, I think as they get older, that can be more challenging if you're separating them for naps. But early on, I'd say sort of under a year-ish, that's can work really well.
Amazing. Get those naps in and it will help the nights for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
So what would you say then? Like, I mean, we both know it's never too late. So if somebody is, they're past the early stages and they haven't done this and they are finding themselves in a pickle now and they're like, okay, I'm listening to this because I have twins and sleep is a mess and they don't know where to start. Whether they're a year in, 2, 3 years in, like, what would you say to a parent in that situation where they're like, I hear you and I know I need to get things on track. Where do I begin?
Yeah. So I'd be looking at their sort of routine for their age. So looking at, if you're wanting to work on naps, making sure you're settling them at the right sort of time of the day. So looking at what their age appropriate wake window is for settling for that nap, and working through that. So sort of getting them down, resettling them. And yes, the first sort of week or so might be really tough. You might feel like you're not getting anywhere with it. But keep going, it will work and you will sort of get to that point where they're both comfortable going down together and having that sleep together. And like you said, it's never too late. There's so many things that you can work on, sort of getting those bedtime routines into place and making sure it's the right timing as well, that they're not going to bed too late, because that can cause a lot more sort of protest at bedtime. If you're getting earlier nights in, getting that right spot where they're tired, and there's a lot less resistance, I guess, to that bedtime.
And just touching then on sort of more parenting aspects here, when they are into toddlerhood, preschool age, and you can have those conversations, I guess this kind of goes for any siblings anyway, but particularly with twins, where I imagine there can be some comparisonitis that happens and so on. Is there anything that you would encourage around the language used? We don't want to be saying things like, why can't you do what your brother does? Or, he does this and you don't. We don't want to be sort of shaming or anything. But is there anything around that with twins, young twins, toddler twins, preschool twins, and how you can communicate to them so that they don't feel that either inferiority or competitiveness or jealousy, particularly towards sleep, but generally, really?
Yeah, I think exactly that, not comparing. So not saying, well, your brother sleeps, why aren't you sleeping? Or look, your brother's fast asleep, why aren't you asleep? And that's, we've been very conscious of not doing that, because they're two individuals, they're gonna have different challenges at different stages in their lives. Not doing that comparison, really. And we're actually at a stage there, my twins are four now, and they will always ask, sort of, if you even at dinner time, one will say, well, how much did Jacob eat? I want to eat the same amount as Jacob. So it's all that, it's that constant, they want to do exactly how the other one's doing. You know, I always try and say, well, it doesn't matter. You need to eat until your tummy's full. It doesn't matter how much Jacob's eating, because you might not be as hungry as him today. Or, you know, trying to instill in that that they're their own person. They're not, they don't always have to be doing exactly the same as what their brother's doing or their twin's doing. And sleep time, again, not using that comparison. Sort of, I would always, my one that struggled a lot more with sleep, you know, I'd say it's really important you get your sleep, because, you know, you want to do lots of playing tomorrow, you need to rest. Getting that sleep in is going to make you feel, you know, really happy and got lots of energy to play. So explaining why sleep is important. Because I think even from a young age, I can understand that concept of needing rest to then, you know, have a really fun day the next day. And even now, if we've got a late night planned or anything like that, you know, if we're going out in the evening, we will say to them, right, let's go and have a sleep. And take them upstairs, and they will happily have a seat. You know, if we say we're going to go out and do something really exciting tonight, and you're going to be up a bit late, so let's have a little sleep, and you'll feel a lot happier. And they'll happily go up, and sort of they understand that concept.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
getting kids to value their sleep is so great. And I know that I managed to do that with mine, and now at teen and preteen kind of age, they do want their sleep. They wouldn't, you know, push to not have their sleep, because they know that they feel rubbish when they don't have it, and you know, just the experience of their day is not going to be as good if they are not well rested. So it's great to instill that positivity around it, I think, definitely.
Yeah, and that understanding, because I think even from a young age, sort of 2.5-ish, they understand that, you know, they understand a lot more than what we think, I think, a lot of the time.
And then they feel good. And I think to be able to reflect back to them, you know, you had such a great sleep, and you know, and then you'll do it, like you say, they piece together, oh, great sleep equals this fun experience. And I like this. And yeah, let's have more of that. It's, yeah, I think it's a great way to get it.
Definitely. And I think
get
it's
it across
also,
to them early on. That's amazing.
An impact on them.
I'm fascinated by this. And I know, having had two fairly close together, it's, you know, not twins, but quite close together. It's a whole different set of challenges.
Yeah, and I think with their behaviour as well, when you've got twins, especially in that like age 2 to 3-ish, you know, that can be really challenging with behaviour. And when you've got two of them, you know, especially if you're going out and things like that, if they're both, you know, at that stage where they're going to kick off about something and things like that, that can be hard as a parent. And it can be, you know, a bit, I know a lot of twin mums who think, I don't want to go out and face it because I can't deal with them both having a meltdown at the same time, and how you actually cope with that. And I think that all links in so well to sleep, because, you know, the more sleep they have, the happier they are. They're getting that rest during the day, sort of getting a good nap during the day, like their behaviour will be so much easier to handle, and they will feel happier. You know, that they can regulate their emotions better. Sort of sleep is just, can really help with those, sort of reducing those tantrums and those breakdowns, because they're well rested, you know, they can handle their emotions a bit easier.
I think this is so helpful, so helpful for parents who are expecting twins, or have twins and are experiencing these challenges around sleep, or maybe you're just curious and you know, you have twins and you think things are all right, but listening to this, you might see some room for even further improvement and optimizing great sleep with your twins. A twin mum once said to me, with my two being 21 months apart, and she said, oh, it's easier with twins, she said, because at least I've got them on the same schedule. So if you are not a twin mum, but like me, have two quite close in age, I feel you, it's a juggle, because they do have slightly different needs, and you can end up going, okay, now it's nap time for one, now it's nap time for the other. But that does pass. And I always say, like, enjoy it when things, the timings fit really well, and know that when they don't, like when you have one on two naps and one on one nap, and you're like, there's constantly someone napping, that it's for such a short time, they grow up really quickly, and before you know it, you know you're past those challenging stages, and just to take the best care of your own sleep when you can around those difficult times as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, Emily, it's been so, so great to talk to you about this today and hear about your own journey and juggle. And, you know, you're here now doing such incredible work supporting families with sleep and twin parents as well. If anybody has any questions for you or wants to reach out to you, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
Either on the Sleep Nanny website or my Instagram page, which is Sleep Nanny Emily Simpson. Yeah. So either of those, you can reach us, send me a direct message on Instagram or, whichever's easier. Go to the Sleep Nanny main page and you can see all the coaches there, and I'm listed there.
You will find Emily there. Well, we will put the links as well in the show notes. So if anybody wants to drop you a message, go there, click it, and you can get in touch and ask your questions. Well, once again, Emily, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll talk again soon.
Brilliant. Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks for joining us today. Make sure you hit the follow or subscribe button on your podcast app so that you don't miss a juicy episode. And if you want to find out more about how Sleep Nanny can help you or about becoming a sleep consultant franchisee, head over to the Sleep Nanny website on sleepnanny.co.uk. If you've enjoyed the episode today, please help us spread the goodness and share it with a friend and leave us a podcast review so that more people can benefit from the takeaways that make parenting feel a little lighter. See you for the next episode of the Sleep Nanny podcast.